Spits worldwide, Agent A, reporting live from Cape Canaveral. MK, big sack, let's rap. Back in time.
It's always the quiet weeks, the quote-unquote quiet weeks, where some of the casual college football fans out there think, I'll take a week off from watching college football. I'll go to the grocery store. I'll go to the pumpkin patch. I'll do all the errands that I need to get done throughout the week. I'll just do them on Saturday. If anyone told you that it was okay to tune out of college football this week because there wasn't a Texas versus Ohio State, there wasn't an LSU versus Clemson, if anyone told you that, you have my permission to block their number. Because just because it was a quiet weekend, whatever that means, there were still some major upsets, some seismic shifts within the sport that we need to get to. Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game across the Game Nashville Sports Network. If you're not already subscribed, please subscribe. Please go subscribe to the Game Nashville Sports Network podcast. You'll find every episode of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. You'll also get all of our great podcasts that we're doing here at 102.5 The Game. And also, please make sure to follow me on the socials. I can be found at Parker_Kelly10. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Go hit me up over there. Also, I do want to apologize. I have a little bit of a head cold right now. So if I sound a little nasally, if I sound a little congested, it's because I am. But I'm pushing through. I made sure to drink some hot tea with some honey in there. But I'm trying the best I can. We're going to push through because college football, it waits for no one, and we have stuff to talk about. So I'm not about to record on a different day because we got to react to these games. Oklahoma and Michigan, you definitely got to talk about that one. I'm actually going to lead the show with that. USF, they go and they beat another ranked opponent. And the vibes are not so high in Gainesville right now. Also, the vibes in Tempe, Arizona. Big win for Mississippi State over the weekend. I'm going to address that, plus some other week two notable headlines that I have to get to. I did see the AP poll. I have some thoughts on that, and I'm going to preface this by saying that my week three PK poll will be out later this week, and I have a feeling I'm more accurate. Just saying, just throwing that out there. And also, I have my team and coaches performances of the weekend. I also have a player in there that I want to shout out as well. All right, let's go ahead and get into it. So Oklahoma and Michigan, this was the headliner of the day. It was in Norman, Oklahoma, out on the prairie. Just a beautiful, beautiful scenery for a football game between an SEC team and a Big Ten team. It certainly lived up to the hype. And you know, we talk about winners first on this show. So we're going to talk about the Oklahoma Sooners first. I do want to take a little bit of a victory lap because I've been singing Oklahoma's praises. I've been singing the praises of John Mateer. I've been singing the praises of Ben Arbuckle. I have been very adamant and out in front of the situation that I believe that Oklahoma is going to make the playoffs. I believe they're going to surprise a lot of people this season. And Saturday night was their first step to accomplishing that. Because there are some people out there, and that's okay if you didn't. I was not one of those people, but there are some people out there who did not watch John Mateer at Washington State. That's okay. That's why you have me, because I did watch him, and I'm going to talk about John Mateer. He put the country on notice week two. A lot of my friends, I was texting with a lot of my buddies after the game. Where did this John Mateer come from? I didn't know about this John Mateer. Yeah, he's legit. John Mateer is legit. And let's just go through this stat line, shall we? Now, it wasn't necessarily eye-popping if you're just a box score watcher and you're looking at his passing statistics. He was 21 of 34 for 270 yards, one touchdown, one interception. But here's an important note. On the ground, he had 19 carries for 74 yards and two touchdowns. One of the biggest things about John Mateer is the utilization of his legs. He was a very deft runner last year at Washington State. He had over 900 yards on the ground. So this guy knows how to use his legs. It's one of the biggest assets of his game. Yeah, he has a very baseball-like slot when he's throwing the football, and he's a pretty good passer. but he also has that element with his legs that he can really take over a game. And that's why it was important to watch this, because you're looking at the box score and pretty good numbers. There's certainly nothing to scoff at, but the feel of the game, of John Mateer really putting the offense on his back, getting them over the hump, and they never trailed to Michigan at any point, but it was you could certainly feel the X factor that John Mateer provided to the offense, something that certainly was not there last year in Norman. And seeing Oklahoma last year go 6-7, losing their bowl game to Navy, there are some people out there, which I have spoken with. I've spoken with some people about Oklahoma, and this was before the season got going, and they told me that they don't think Oklahoma is going to do much this year because of what they did last year. Last year was a story of its own. It wasn't an organizational error, I guess is the best way to put it, because it wasn't a culture problem. That's probably a better way to put it. Last year, they had Seth Luttrell calling the offense. Seth Luttrell was not a good offensive coordinator. We know that. At least he wasn't last year. We know that because he got fired. And they replaced him with Ben Arbuckle, who was John Mateer's offensive coordinator at Washington State up in Pullman. So there were a lot of issues for Oklahoma offensively. I attribute a lot of that to play calling, situational feel, awareness. Jackson Arnold turned the ball over a lot. There was just a lot that went wrong with Oklahoma last year, but I don't think that is an overall product of the Oklahoma program that we have known over the last 5 to 10 years. Now that they have Ben Arbuckle, who I believe is going to be one of the fastest rising names in the sport, one of the hottest commodities for head coaching jobs coming up within the next few years, this just feels a lot better at Oklahoma, and rightfully so. They have a quarterback who did not have to learn a new system. He's just kind of plug and play with his offensive coordinator. Boom, you plop him into the Oklahoma offense, and look what it can do. They did some great things versus Illinois State in week one. Yes, I know it was Illinois State, but the offense looked very good. The offense did some good things against a stout Michigan defense. 24 points is not the highest score ever, but Michigan's defense is pretty good, and John Mateer made plays when he needed to make plays. And it was certainly very refreshing if you're an Oklahoma fan, or if you're just a college football fan in general. It was certainly very refreshing to see. Deion Burks, the wide receiver one at Oklahoma, 7 receptions for 101 yards and 1 touchdown. You've heard me talk about Deion Burks before. Deion Burks wasn't as prevalent last year because he was hurt a majority of the year. So most of America didn't get the chance to learn his name, but he was a transfer from Purdue 2 seasons ago. And now that he is fully healthy, we get to see a little bit of the impact that he made on the game. And he certainly made a huge, huge impact. The go-to target for John Mateer. I believe that duo is going to be lethal. And we'll know. We'll know how legit Oklahoma is, because they have Temple next week. They're going on the road to Temple. Yeah, I know, you heard me right. They are going on the road to Temple. I don't remember the last time we've ever said that before. But yes, they are going on the road to a Group of Five school. So after that, SEC play starts. And Oklahoma has the 3rd hardest strength of schedule in the entire country. So we're going to know how legit this Oklahoma team is. And I believe they are very legit. So I'm going to play a little bit of sound, because this was John Mateer post-game on ABC. He was getting interviewed by Holly Rowe. I just want you to listen to this. I just want you to listen to the type of answers that John Mateer gives, and I will give my thoughts on it after.
On right now, we're live on TV right now. What do you think about winning over Michigan, a game of blue bloods, a historic matchup, and you just won it, John?
We've been excited for this game.
Thank you so much.
For a long time, and I'm proud of these guys. I mean, we beat them, and we didn't play our best game with a bunch of turnovers and a bunch of things we need to clean up. I'm so proud of my teammates.
You said when you walked on this field last week to play, it was surreal. Tonight, you look comfortable in this building. How did you get comfortable so quickly?
I know that these fans have my back. These fans have all of our backs, and I threw a pick, and you know, but next time I go on the field, they cheer me on, and I appreciate that so much. So, Boomer.
You used your legs so effectively and efficiently tonight. They couldn't catch you at times. How are you able to mix that in with the pass?
It's dangerous. Plus one run game is not good for defensive coordinators, and they don't like it. And I'm glad Coach Arbuckle trusts the ball in my hands, you know, and I'm proud of the O-line and the running backs, tight ends blocking it up.
Speaking of the O-line, that long drive to end the game and eat up the clock, how do you describe that?
Yes, ma'am. That's what it's all about. I mean, it's not the flashy stuff and the big plays. It's the gritty hard work and the urgency that we played with on that drive. And that's football. That's how you win.
Thank you so much. You. Appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Inject that interview into my veins, please. John Mateer, first-class football guy. He mentioned at the end of that interview that it's not always the flashy plays, it's the nitty-gritty, the line of scrimmage, making sure that that run game is able to blossom. He understands. He understands what it takes to win at a high level, and I thought that answer was so profound from John Mateer. How can you not love the guy? He certainly put America on notice after Saturday night's game. Okay, let's flip over to Michigan because I do want to address some things with them. Bryce Underwood was 9 of 24 for 142 yards. I saw a lot of people on the internet. I have a friend who is a Michigan fan. They were complaining about the Michigan play calling. And to which I responded, well, Bryce Underwood did. He looked like a true freshman. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe Bryce Underwood is going to be that guy, because I certainly do. He was the number one overall recruit in last year's class for a reason. His ceiling is sky high. Sky high, Bryce Underwood. I've seen videos of him throw the ball. I watched a little bit of his highlights versus New Mexico in week one. I actually had the game on. But he just makes throws that a normal, typical quarterback should not be able to make. So this is not me dissing Bryce Underwood, but Bryce Underwood missed some open receivers. And when I say missed, I mean he didn't even throw the ball to them during the route concept. And I saw that pop up a couple of times during the game. And there is a two-sided coin to this. Yes, Bryce Underwood did. He didn't pull the trigger. He didn't throw to guys when they were open, but Michigan also does not have great pass catchers. I believe they're tied in. I'm Blake Klein. I believe he's going to be really good. But they have a guy by the name of Donovan McCauley, and they have a guy named Samaj Morgan. Those are not game-changing players at receiver. I view Michigan through a 2026 lens, meaning this is not a throwaway season for them by any means. I still could see them. I think I predicted them to go 9-3, 8-4, somewhere around that range. But I view Michigan through a 2026 lens because I don't believe they're a national championship contender this year, but I believe they will be next year because I believe the attraction, the lure to playing with Bryce Underwood, I believe Michigan's going to go out and get some high notable names from the transfer portal to implement in their wide receiver room, and that is going to help tremendously. Because Michigan already has a good run game. They have Justice Haynes, a transfer from Alabama. He had 125 rushing yards on 19 carries, a 6.6 average, and he had a score. Defense, I thought they forced some turnovers. They played well versus Oklahoma. So held them to 24 points. So, but they just need help at wide receiver. And I think that will come after this season. I think they're going to go out and get some guys from the portal. So that's not me dissing Bryce Underwood, because I'm very adamant in my praise of Bryce Underwood, but he looked like a freshman a bit out there. And you can attribute that to play calling if you so please, but I don't think it was entirely play calling. Okay. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. I need to address these upsets that happened over the weekend. You're listening to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Whoopsie daisy, call me crazy. Whoopsie daisy, call me gonna catch that. It was a big whoopsie daisy for Billy Napier and the Florida Gators over the weekend as they hosted the University of South Florida, the Bulls, coached by Alex Golish, and they slipped on a banana peel. I guess is a nice way to put it. And they got beat by the Bulls in the Swamp. A result, I don't know how many people expected that. I certainly was not one of them, as I predicted Florida to win the game. I predicted to go Florida to go 9-3 in my SEC preseason schedule predictions. And now I feel like an idiot because this was not supposed to happen. This was not supposed to happen for Billy Napier and the Gators, but it did. Let's talk about South Florida because they have now killed two teams on national television in back-to-back weeks. They killed Boise State in week one, 34-7, and now they go into the Swamp and they decimate the Gators. And while the score may not indicate it, it certainly was. Florida had opportunities to win this game, and they have put themselves in great positions to win this game. By the way, they acquired talent through recruiting over the past couple of cycles. By the way, they've acquired talent from the portal. By the overall staff, there hasn't been a lot of staff churn. There's been a lot of continuity within the coaching staff, within the organization. And yet, they still inexplicably lost a game that they were clearly the more talented team. If we're looking at paper, Florida, you compare Florida's roster to South Florida's roster, you don't know who the two teams are. You just see a blank sheet with names, with star rankings, with whatever. Florida is clearly the more talented team, but yet they still lost. Well, why is that? At some point for Billy Napier in Florida, he's made it to year four. Everyone was calling for his job. He was on the hot seat entering last season. He had the audacity, him and his team, had the audacity to keep winning, to win a bowl game, and finish the season 8-5. So that got him another year. And now the expectations for Florida were much higher than they've been over the last 3 to 4 years. They were ranked in the preseason poll. They were ranked 13th last week. So a lot of people, a lot of college football media I saw had Florida in their preseason 12-team playoff bracket. So this is no slouch of a team, but yet they lost an inexplicable game to a team that they should not have lost to. It's mind-boggling. And now you look at the upcoming schedule for Florida, and they have the number one strength of schedule in the country. It's by far and away the toughest schedule in the country. It was already tough last year, but it's inverted, and now a lot of those games that they had at home, they now go on the road. So they have LSU this weekend at LSU. Not going to be an easy game. They are at Miami the following week. They have Texas, and then they're at Texas A&M. You want to talk about a four-game stretch. So the drumbeat in the distance, if you can hear that, it's getting louder, and Billy Napier has to respond because fans are sure not taken kindly to the loss over the weekend. But how about USF? How about Alex Golish? If he's not already, I don't know what else he has to do, but he should be on the list for every Power Four school that is looking to get a new head coach. Alex Golish should be at the top of the list if you're looking to pull a guy up from the ranks, from the Group of Five ranks. Alex Golish should be number one. What he's done in back-to-back weeks, think about what he did to Boise State, a team that is coming off of their first ever college football playoff appearance. They've been one of the best Group of Five teams historically. You have a ranked Boise State team coming to your place. Not a lot of people are giving you a shot to beat Boise State, and you beat them 34-7. And then people's eyebrows kind of raised. You're like, huh, maybe USF is legit. Well, we'll see. They get Florida next week in the Swamp. What did they do? They go into the Swamp, and they beat Florida. Unbelievable. And now, South Florida is going to get another chance to prove it because they will go to Miami next week and take on the number five Hurricanes. No cupcakes for USF. No cupcakes for USF until they get to their conference play. I'm impressed. And I will say, I made a mistake of not putting USF in my top 25. I made a mistake. I considered it, but I didn't do it. It was a stupid mistake by me. They will be 100% ranked in my week 3 PK poll, and they will be ranked pretty highly. That's all I'm going to say on that. You'll have to wait for that to come out. Okay. Also, another upset that happened over the weekend that I didn't see coming. This one kind of came out of left field. I talked about it a little bit. I previewed the game. That was Arizona State at Mississippi State. I did a preview on Friday. I did a quick preview. I didn't spend too much time on this game because I thought it was going to be one that Arizona State was going to win. I thought Mississippi State was going to be on the at the bottom of the SEC like they were last year along with Kentucky, and they get a big-time win over an Arizona State team who a lot of people, myself included, predicted to win the Big 12. So let me just start off by saying that I'm incredibly happy for that program. I'm incredibly happy for Jeff Lebby because this program deserves this win. They really do. That program had fallen on hard times ever since Mike Leach passed away. Went out and they got Zach Arnett. Then they fire him. They bring in Jeff Lebby. He's in year two. Nobody has high expectations for Mississippi State. They get ravaged by the portal. They lose their best receiver. Blake Shapen, who was their quarterback last year, was hurt for a majority of the year. He's back. I was so happy for Mississippi State. That environment was just, it was incredible. I'm sure you saw the video circulating of Arizona State while they were practicing. They had people kind of standing off to the side, ringing the cowbells. I was thinking to myself, that's great and all, but that's nowhere as close to as loud as it's going to be at Mississippi State at Davis Wade Stadium on Saturday. And the noise, the crowd certainly played a factor in Mississippi State. Won a big, that's a signature win for Jeff Lebby. There's no way around it. So I remember I went to the Tennessee game on Saturday as they played ETSU. I was with a buddy. We went to a local sports bar to watch this game, or we were watching Oklahoma and Michigan, and we had this game on right next to Oklahoma and Michigan, so we were kind of looking at both. And when I saw that Mississippi State went up 17-0, I'm like, my eyebrows raised. I'm like, oh boy, is this really going to happen? And sure enough, Arizona State starts to crawl back into it. Sure enough, they tie it up at 17 all, and then they take the lead. They go up 20-17. I'm like, oh boy, Mississippi State's not going to be able to hold on. And then what happens? Big play from Mississippi State. They get a touchdown, seals the deal, a 58-yard touchdown pass from Blake Shapen to Brennan Thompson, and Mississippi State goes up 24-20. Arizona State has one more chance. They throw an interception, game over. Mississippi State wins the game. Unbelievable. I am so happy for Mississippi State. This program really needed this. They recently started, or they have plans to build an indoor football facility, which was long overdue. So you can kind of tell that the program is starting from scratch once again. They're starting from the stubs, and man, they really needed this. This is a foundational win to build your program. I really like Jeff Lebby as a coach, so he's an easy guy to root for, and it's certainly happy to see that Mississippi State got this win. But for Arizona State, what does this mean for Arizona State? Because a lot of people thought with the loss of Cam Scataboo that was really going to affect Arizona State in the run game. Arizona State ran the ball just fine on Saturday night. They ran for 251 yards. Relique Brown, 18 carries, 110 yards, 6.1 average, a long of 26. Kanye Udo, transfer from Army, 23 carries for 105 yards, a 4.6 average and a touchdown. They rushed as a team for 251 yards. So that wasn't the problem. Sam Levitt was having problems throwing the football. He was 10 of 22 for 82 yards, one touchdown, and he threw two interceptions. So that was the problem for Arizona State. That was one of the big glaring problems for Arizona State, is they were not able to throw the ball against a Mississippi State secondary that's not really, nobody has any expectations for them because nobody really knows what to expect. So for Arizona State, what does this mean? Does this mean that maybe we were a little too high on Arizona State? Maybe they were a little overrated by some of our standards? Well, I don't know. It could mean that Mississippi State, their trajectory is happening a lot faster than many of us anticipated. So I don't know, but we'll find out quickly. Arizona State, they have Texas State this upcoming week. That's hopefully not going to be too big of a challenge for them, but they go on the road at Baylor. They have TCU. They're at Utah. They have Texas Tech. That's their next four-game stretch. I'm really excited for that Texas Tech game. That is on October 18th. That's the one I have circled because that was the matchup that I predicted to be the Big 12 championship game for 2025. We're going to find out about Arizona State quickly because in terms of a Big 12 schedule, it is a pretty tough conference schedule because they're at Utah, they host Texas Tech, and then they're on the road at Iowa State, who continues to impress week after week. So we'll find out quickly about what kind of team Arizona State is. Some other notable headlines. How about the Vanderbilt Commodores? I feel like this game wasn't talked about enough nationally. I talked about it. They played at Virginia Tech this last weekend. It was the back half of a home-and-home. Vanderbilt beat Virginia Tech to open up the regular season last year. It was a big win for Vanderbilt and certainly the start of a magical season, or what would be a magical season for the Commodores. Well, they returned the favor by going to Blacksburg and beating Virginia Tech in their own building. Here's the paper popper of a stat. Vanderbilt had a yardage advantage in the second half. They outgained Virginia Tech by 300 yards in the second half. Virginia Tech was up 20-10 at the half, and Vanderbilt did not let them score again. They outscored Virginia Tech 34-0 and outgained them by 300 yards in the second half. Unbelievable performance from Vanderbilt as a whole. It was a team win. Offense, Diego Pavia had 193 yards for two touchdowns, also threw an interception. Vanderbilt rushed for 262 yards. I thought the defense played lights out in the second half. So I'm gonna get to Vanderbilt in the next segment because I have a quick thought on them. But man, just wanted to throw that out there. It was a great win for the Commodores. We talk about Vandy a lot since they're one of the local teams here. So big win for them. Oregon committed many light crimes against Oklahoma State on Saturday. I'm sure that you saw on social media the buildup to this game. Oklahoma State is not the Oklahoma State of a few years ago. There was a little bit of back and forth between Mike Gundy and Dan Lanning. Mike Gundy making comments about how much Oregon is spending on their team. Dan Lanning kind of, you know, shook it off, you know, like he typically in Dan Lanning fashion. And let me tell you what, Dan Lanning is not one. He's not a coach that you want to be on the wrong side of. Let's just say it that way, because Oregon beat Oklahoma State 69-3 on Saturday. Yes, they beat them by 66, 69-3. And this is just, this is bad. Oregon had 631 yards of total offense. Meanwhile, Oklahoma State had 211. So Oregon, we were just talking about Virginia Tech outgaining Virginia Tech by 300 yards in the second half. Well, Oregon outgained Oklahoma State by 420 yards in total. You want to talk about a bloodbath? That was certainly that. Oregon did some unspeakable things to Oklahoma State on Saturday, and Oklahoma State certainly fallen on hard times. I was talking with some friends this weekend about, man, I miss when Oklahoma State was good. I do too. But there's a lot going on and a lot going wrong in Stillwater right now. Okay, I did see the latest AP poll. I have some thoughts. Let's get to that on the other side. You're listening to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yes, it is true. I will confirm the rumors that I have seen. The latest AP poll released by ESPN yesterday afternoon. Let me start off by saying that some of the slots where these teams are ranked and some of the teams that are not ranked, I think is clear evidence of drug use by whoever is on the AP poll committee, because it's astonishing. Okay, so I'm just going to go through this list for you. So Ohio State, Penn State, LSU, Oregon, Miami, that's the top five. I don't have a whole lot of qualms with that. I'm happy that Oregon is now in the top four, because it doesn't seem like Oregon, like they're always going to get national attention because they're Oregon, but they're a legit national championship contender. So I'm glad that Oregon is up a couple of spots to number four. I personally would have LSU ahead of Penn State at two, but that's just me. Georgia is at six. I think that is pretty fair considering their performance against Austin Peay this last weekend. Georgia won that game 28-6, so truly not that impressive of a performance. Texas is at seven, Notre Dame at eight, Illinois at nine, Florida State at 10. The committee is much higher on Illinois right now than I am. I think it was Illinois had a good win against Duke on Saturday, but Illinois in the top 10, I don't know if I can bring myself to put them in the top 10 yet. I think they're just on the outside of that. Oklahoma, here's my first real big issue with this. They have Oklahoma at 13, right behind Clemson and right behind South Carolina at 11, Florida State's at 10. Oklahoma's a top 10 team, because if we're doing we got to get your preseason polls. We can't use that. We can't use preseason polls to determine where teams should be based on where you had them in the preseason. We should do these rankings based on what actually transpired on the field week to week. And you're telling me Oklahoma's performance against Michigan doesn't at least warrant a top 10 spot? It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. I'm going to have Oklahoma in my top 10. Quick spoiler for the PK poll for week three. Iowa State is at 14. I would have to agree. Iowa State's playing like a top 15 right now, or a top 15 team right now. Tennessee at 15. I really like that, because I was at this game on Saturday. I saw Joey Aguilar throw the football. Granted, it was against East Tennessee State, but Joey Aguilar, the way the ball comes out of his hands, the way the offense is operated, is much different than how it was operated under Nico Iamaleava. Texas A&M at 16, Ole Miss at 17. Finally, we get South Florida at 18. I'm much higher on South Florida than this. They will be a little bit higher. That's another spoiler for you. Alabama at 19, Utah at 20. This tells me all I need to know right here. Clearly, the committee, whoever's voting on this thing, has not watched Utah play. Utah, they beat UCLA 43-10 in week one. And Utah beat Cal Poly 63-9. So in two games, Utah has scored a combined 106 points, so that's 53 points per game. Utah defense is going to be good under Morgan Scalley, under Kyle Whittingham. The offense had not necessarily caught up yet to the defense. It was pretty good for a couple years there with Cam Rising, but Utah has a quarterback by the name of Devin Dampier. They have an offensive coordinator by the name of Jason Beck, both of which were at New Mexico last year. They go to Salt Lake City this year, and suddenly, boom, that Utah offense is clicking in the first two games. I know the committee has not watched Utah. Utah should be much higher. It is criminally ranked where Utah is right now. Texas Tech is at 21, Indiana at 22, Michigan at 23, Auburn at 24, and Missouri at 25. Where's Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt received one vote to be ranked this week. One vote. That win against Virginia Tech was much more impressive to me than what Auburn did this past weekend. This is no slight to Auburn. I believe the talent that Auburn has on the roster, they're undefeated at this point, so I believe, yeah, that could warrant a top 25 spot, but where's Vanderbilt? That win over Virginia Tech, what they just did this past weekend, isn't that what rankings are all about? is what teams actually do on the field. This isn't about where you had Vanderbilt slotted to finish in the SEC in the preseason. Who cares about that? We go by what actually happened on the field. And if you watched Vanderbilt versus Virginia Tech, especially in that second half, that was incredibly impressive. So why is Vanderbilt not ranked? I will never know. So Arizona State, Florida, SMU, they all fell out of the top 25. I am kind of surprised that Arizona State and Florida fell out. I thought that the AP committee would keep them in the 20 range. SMU, I'm not surprised that they fell out. I wasn't incredibly high on SMU. I had them ranked number 25 in the week one PK poll and the week two PK poll. SMU lost in double overtime to Baylor on Saturday, so they fell out. I like SMU, like Rhett Lashley. I just don't believe they're a top 25 team. Cannot wait to get to my rankings on for week three. That is coming up later this week. Hopefully, I'll get that to you on Wednesday. So make sure that you're subscribed so you can see, and that you're also following me on the socials, because if you don't happen to listen to the episode, which I wouldn't advise you do, I want you to listen to the episode to at least understand my reasoning for why teams are ranked where they are. At least give me a follow on the socials, so because I will be posting my top 25 like I do every week. So you're going to want to stay in tune with that. So BYU is a team that has received votes to be ranked. Georgia Tech, I will have Georgia Tech ranked. I'm very high on Georgia Tech. USC, I really want to rank USC. I just don't know where to put them right now. TCU, Mississippi State, of course, after getting a big win versus Arizona State. Louisville, they beat James Madison on Friday night, so they receive votes. Nebraska, they had one of the most underrated team performances this last week as they beat, I forgot who they played, but they scored 68 points. 68 points. To put that in perspective, the last time Nebraska scored 60 points in a game was against Georgia Southern in 2022. Last year on offense, Nebraska scored 23.5 points, and they scored 68 points on Saturday. Granted, I'm looking this up because I cannot remember. Oh, they played Akron. So they beat Akron 68-0. Yeah, it was Akron, but still. That Nebraska offense looked really good on Saturday under Dana Holgorsen, who is their offensive coordinator this year, just in case you didn't know. So I'm very high on Nebraska, and they have a challenge coming up. They have Michigan. I believe that is going to be played in week three, so I'm very, very excited. Tulane received votes. I agree with that. Baylor, UNLV, Pittsburgh, Navy, Vanderbilt with one, and Memphis with one as well. Man, I wish I had an AP vote so I could fix some of this garbage. Vanderbilt absolutely deserves to be ranked. Oklahoma should be a lot higher. Utah should be a lot higher. Those are some issues that I have with that. Okay, one more segment to go here on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. I want to give you my best and worst team performances, coach performances, player performances, all of that. We'll get to that on the other side. You're listening to the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment here on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm going to hand out some awards, some hypothetical awards, not actual awards, but some hypothetical awards to my winners and losers of the weekend. I have best coaching performance, best team performance, most underrated team performance, best player performance, biggest loser, and biggest winner. I've already talked about a lot of these teams, players, coaches that are going to get the awards, but I just want to go through it. New exercise, a new segment that I'm trying. Okay, and I'm going to try my hardest to get through this because I am feeling very, very congested right now. So bear with me if it sounds a little rough, but we're going to get through it together. All right, best coaching performance. This should not come as a shocker. It is Alex Golish of USF. They have beaten two straight ranked opponents. I believe Alex Golish is going to be a Power Four head coach very, very soon, maybe even potentially next year, which is the most likely case scenario in my mind. USF, they get Miami this week. It's at their place in Coral Gables. But will they make it three in a row? We'll have to find out, because if they beat Miami, USF, they're already in the conversation to be the Group of Five representative in the playoff. That is still months away, but that is the conversation that is being had surrounding USF right now. We'll see how legit they are. I believe they're pretty legit already based on the sample size that we have so far and what I know about Alex Golish. But they get Miami this week, and it's going to be a fun game to watch. I'm definitely going to preview that on Wednesday. Okay, best team performance. I'm trying not to outthink the room here. It's Oklahoma. They beat Michigan. It was a much-needed win for Brent Venables. It was more necessary for Brent Venables to get this win for Oklahoma than it was for Sherrone Moore to get it for Michigan, because Michigan is going to be a legit national championship contender in 2026. Oklahoma, they needed this win for the sake of Brent Venables to keep his job. No coach has ever survived three losing seasons at Oklahoma besides one, and that was over 100 years ago. Brent Venables already has two, and they have a tough schedule. The road does not get any easier. They needed this win, and they got it, so it was a very impressive performance for Oklahoma. Most underrated team performance, that was Vanderbilt. Outside of what we do locally here with the Middle Tennessee teams, with Vanderbilt, with Tennessee, nobody's talking about Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt went into Blacksburg, and they emptied out Lane Stadium, which is, when Virginia Tech is good, Lane Stadium can be one of the most intimidating places to play a football game, and they went and they emptied it out in the second half. Very impressive performance for Vanderbilt, what they were able to do on the ground. Obviously, Diego Pavia, their defense holding Virginia Tech to a big old goose egg in the second half. Vanderbilt is my most underrated team performance. Best player performance, that is Sawyer Robertson. Now, I easily could have given this to John Mateer, but I wanted to mix it up a little bit. Sawyer Robertson at Baylor, he is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the Big 12, maybe one of the most underrated quarterbacks nationally. He was 34 of 50 for 440 yards, four touchdowns, and a double overtime win over SMU. This was at SMU, playing in a road environment, a team that is coming off their first college football playoff appearance. Baylor did not have much of a run game. They didn't have much of a run game versus Auburn in week one. So a lot of that offensive pressure is on the shoulders of Sawyer Robertson, and he delivered. It was a big-time win for Baylor and a great stat line, a great performance overall from the quarterback. Okay, biggest loser of the weekend. This shouldn't come as a surprise. It's Florida. It's Billy Napier in Florida. They lost to a team that they should not have lost to. They lost to a much inferior opponent. No disrespect to USF, because I'm high on them. But Florida should not have lost this game, especially in the Swamp. They should not have lost this game. And I worry what this does for Florida's mindset as they get ready to enter a tough, tough stretch of an SEC slate. They have Miami coming up. What is this going to do to their mental makeup? I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. But what I do know is if Florida wanted any shot of making it to the college football playoff, you lost to USF, but you can't afford to lose many more. You might be able to lose one more and get away with it, but Florida cannot lose anymore if they want a chance at that college football playoff. We're going to see how this response, how it looks. That's what God made college football for. That's why we play the games on Saturdays. The biggest winner, Mississippi State. Duh. They got the win over an Arizona State team who was ranked 12th in the country. Mississippi State projected to finish last in the SEC along with Kentucky. Nobody gave a shot to Mississippi State to win this game, and they did. And they pulled it off at home in front of their home fans. They came and they showed out, and they got a big-time win over Arizona State. And Mississippi State, if you look at their schedule, they could start the season off 4-0, which I believe is higher than their original win total that was predicted at the beginning of the season. So good for Mississippi State. Good for Mississippi State. They are my biggest winner of the weekend. All right, that just about wraps it up here on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Hey, I really appreciate you guys that have been listening so far. We're going to keep this thing rolling. We are going to keep this thing rolling right along. I've had a lot of fun with this. We're in the swing of things. So I got a preview episode coming up of all the big games that are happening in week three. Also, I'll have a new PK poll for you, so make sure that you are listening in for that. Please subscribe to the Game Nashville Sports Network wherever you get your fine listening materials, and also follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10. Really appreciate all of you that have listened so far. The show's doing very well, and that is because of you. We'll have another episode for you. My goal is to get it on Wednesday. That's what I'm shooting for. That's the plan. It's been very busy here with football season going on. Got a lot of different responsibilities, but I'm having a lot of fun with this show, so we're going to keep pumping out these episodes. So make sure that you're listening in for that. Okay, I'll talk to you on Wednesday. In the meantime, take care. Have a great start to the week. God bless.